You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is Mike McDaniel. Mike, week 11 in the books. We are recapping. We are late again. That's on me. I apologize. How are you doing? Are you ready to recap some games?
Is that the tarmac you're on still, or is that your...
You know...
I'm just checking.
I just now got back. It's been roughly like 3.5 days on a plane. They didn't let us off. They didn't feed us. No, Mike, truthfully, the reason that we're a little late on this here, we were going to record this Sunday night as typical, and then, you know, I had a flight out of Atlanta. It was scheduled to depart at about 3 o'clock. Got delayed a little bit for the flight crew to leave at about 3:30, and then they discovered a maintenance issue, and then they just, like, kept us sitting at the gate on the plane, didn't let us off or anything like that, until 6:30 we finally pushed off. Spent about 3.5 hours on a plane with a toddler without even moving, and then got 2 more hours with the toddler trying to keep him at bay. He did great for what it's worth. But the point being, I wasn't ready to go last night until almost like 11 o'clock Eastern time. And so the people deserve better than what I could have done for you at that point.
Right.
So here we are. This is Monday evening. Apologies for the delay, but life happens. I've been traveling a boatload, but I'm done, Mike. I am here for the foreseeable future. I'm good. Let's go. Let's talk about some games.
Airliners shouldn't be able to do that. Like, leave you on the plane for 3 hours if you're not going anywhere. They should be able to let you off the plane. It's crap.
Well, and shout out to my man Jeff Kramer over at From the Rumble Seat, who also works at Delta Tech Ops at the Atlanta airport and was giving me the play-by-play of what was going on. And let's just say it's not the finest day for Delta's maintenance people.
Well, at least they identified the issue while you were on the ground. So
that, yes, truthfully, yes, because the issue that I've been made aware that we were having would have been a really, really, really bad issue to find out while in the air.
Okay. Oh,
and just be thankful you're hearing about it from me now and not like on CNN this morning.
Put it that way. That's fair. I would have been flying solo for the recap.
Exactly.
No pun intended, but seriously, I would be flying solo.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, Mike, I was kind of bummed, right, because we weren't able to go last night on Sunday night as normal, because I was excited to talk about a lot of this action this weekend. We had a lot of games in the ACC, 8 of them, to be precise, and almost every single one of them was interesting in one way or another, and I was very excited to talk about it. I still am. So you want to get into these?
Let's do it.
Let's start with the Atlantic Division Championship game, de facto, we'll call it. Number 12, Wake Forest, Steamin' Deeks, 45. The number 16, NC State, Wolfpack, 42. This was a hell of a game, Mike. It was back and forth. I think at one point, Wake Forest had like a 10-point lead, but that was about as separated as it ever got. I guess Wake had a 13-point lead in the first half. The final 2 minutes of the first half were bonkers, like absolutely back and forth. There were, NC State scored 2 touchdowns and Wake scored 10 points all in the final 2 minutes and 5 seconds of the first half.
Yep.
Just very back and forth, very competitive, very fun game. Just happened. NC State scores a touchdown with about 45 seconds left to pull it within 3 points. Goes for an onside kick. Ricky Person recovers it, but only went about 9.5 yards before recovering it. So that's an illegal touching. Wake then kneels it out and the game was over. Incredible game, I thought. Good performance from NC State by and large to be there. Devin Leary in particular, I mean, what a hell of a game he played. But congratulations to Wake Forest. I mean, they need one more now between Clemson and Boston College over the next 2 weeks. And if they win either of those, they're going to Charlotte, Mike.
They are. Wake's offense, well, let me backtrack. NC State's defense gave Wake Forest offense absolute hell in this game. Wake couldn't do anything on the ground. 2.6 yards per rush, did have three touchdowns, but Justice Allison was Wake Forest's leading rusher. He had 56 yards and 17 carries. That's 3.3 yards per rush. He had two scores. Sam Hartman threw three interceptions. It was not his best game, but they kept going back to the well. He threw the ball 47 times here. And this game did have three touchdown passes. Made a couple of big-time throws, but was not his best game for certain. And Wake had a lot of trouble moving the ball on offense, still found a way to score 45 points. That's how impressive this offense is this year, Joey. Like, they really struggle sometimes, like, with some of the defenses they play. They can still put up points.
Wake
scored 45 is impressive.
They scored 45 points and turned the ball over three times.
Right, right. This could have been easily another 70-point performance against a really good defense. Like, NC State's defense has been one of the better units in the ACC all year, and I thought they played a pretty good game here against Wake and still give up 45.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I mean, this was, if you look at the drive charts and just the way that this game went, like, it was really pretty weird. Like, Wake's offense was either basically going three and out or scoring, like, on every offensive possession. Like, if they got, like, a second first down on a drive, like, they were going down and scoring on that drive.
Right.
I mean, just, otherwise they were just going three and out. And it's just kind of a weird dichotomy to watch. Sam Hartman, sneaky, you know, Mike, the last couple weeks, not that impressive from a number standpoint. Finishes this game 20 of 47 for 290, three touchdowns, three picks.
Hobie.
Yeah, that, yeah, keep that in mind.
He's a strong candidate this week.
A.T. Perry, by the way, had like 23 targets in this game and only caught five passes. There was just all sorts of weirdness up and down Wake Forest's stat lines in this game. You know, they did get a cheap touchdown right before the half. NC State had a fumble. Wake runs it back to about the five-yard line and gets a one-play, five-yard touchdown drive. That kind of ends up making a difference there in a three-point game. But, I mean, just very back and forth. I did want to point this out. We got an email from our friend Christopher Anderson. He's a listener. Says, hey, guys, and I think this is a good point within this game to bring up. He says, hey, guys, love the podcast. A couple weeks ago, you were skeptical that Phil Longo would run the ball enough against Wake, and surprisingly, he did. Phil Longo, of course, North Carolina's offensive coordinator. Last night, however, I think NC State really didn't run the ball enough, and their offensive coordinator did not put them in position to win against one of the worst rushing defenses in the country. If NC State doesn't make it to Charlotte, that will be why. What are your thoughts? And on some level, I agree. On another level, NC State has had a hell of a time running the ball in a number of spots this year. Lately,
like within the last month even.
But it was going okay last night, or, you know, Saturday night. Like, Ricky Person and Zonovan Knight only got 12 carries. They went for 66 yards, Mike. Like,
yeah,
it was working. They just didn't do it. So I think there's something to that from Chris Anderson there. Like, honestly, run the ball more, maybe shorten the game, keep Wake's offense off the field a little more. Like, I think there's something to that. You don't need to throw the ball 59 times with Devin Leary. Like,
right now, and I think it plays into this next stat. NC State was 3 for 14 on third down. And if you look at how this game played out, NC State was in third and long a lot, a lot, Joey. And either not being able to run the ball, or in this case, in this particular game, just deciding not to run the ball plays into that, right? You know, we've seen various ACC teams this year struggle to run the football in recent weeks. Even NC State, in particular, struggled to run the ball in recent weeks, but they were actually running the ball at a pretty good clip on Saturday night. And still, you know, you get into a position where, okay, you're more confident putting the ball in Devin Leary's hands. Fine. At some point, like, you are going to have to establish your run a little bit, and you have a couple of really good running backs to choose from, right? Like, not every ACC team has Bam Knight and Ricky Person in the backfield. So to just kind of neglect to run the ball is an issue. I think it is a reason why NC State lost this game. Will I say it's the reason? Probably not. I mean, 3 for 14 on third downs, bad. Committing 14 penalties for 119 yards is worse. Turning the ball over three times, not great. So look, Wake won this game by a field goal. I think it could have been by more. We know that NC State scored that touchdown late, kind of in garbage time, down a couple scores. But you know, I think NC State, if they'd played a cleaner game, they would have put themselves in better position. And defensively, I thought they were largely good. You know, I thought they you know, gave Wake a really hard time running the football. You know, Wake really couldn't establish a run at all in this game. Sam Hartman, secretly kind of crappy. He did make a couple of big time throws, a couple big touchdown passes with some very accurate throws, but he was off the mark most of the night. He was getting rushed. I thought NC State's pass rush did a very good job. But, you know, Hartman was in a position where he was kind of running for his life a bit, and he wasn't completing passes at as high of a clip as we would usually expect.
Right.
And Wake couldn't run the ball. So I think NC State's defense certainly did put them in position to win, but at the same time, you still gave up 45 points. So it's kind of this weird dichotomy, like within the game, where you feel pretty good about where you're at. You give up 406 yards of offense to Wake Forest, which, you know, sounds bad on paper, but you take a step back and think about what Wake's offense has done this year. It's really not all that bad to only give up 400 yards to Wake Forest. So it's weird. Cause I came away from it, you know, watching it saying, you know what, NC State's defense really hung in there. Like they played a pretty decent game, but there were so many different shortcomings on offense and still so many mistakes that were made in this game that I do feel like Wake Forest was the better team, you know, for four quarters. Like I felt that way during the game. I feel that way coming out of it. And at the same time, I've said on this podcast multiple times that I think that NC State is the most complete team in the ACC this year, offense, defense, special teams. And I still believe that they're built that way, but sometimes they just get in their own way, Joey. And they got beat by a better team, in my opinion. Like, I think Wake just played better and they've been playing better, but NC State got in their own way too.
I'm starting to think that I might have, you know, I might have been mischaracterizing it, saying that NC State was the most complete team in the ACC. I think, Mike, maybe the correct word would be that they're the most balanced team in the ACC.
Yeah, that might be a better way to phrase it.
They're balanced. They can do it all, but I don't know that they're consistent enough to call them a complete team.
Right.
I
agree.
That's probably, honestly, and that's probably the biggest difference, really, is just consistency. Like, they can do any of it in pockets and at times, but the consistency is not there for them to really truly be a fully complete team. And the number that, I think the number that we kind of glazed over a little bit, but I want to emphasize a little bit more here. NC State had 14 penalties for 119 yards in this game.
Yeah, it's bad.
You had an extra 9 penalties for almost 70 yards. Like, that is a big deal. To go with the 3 times you turn the ball over, I completely agree with what you said that like if they play a cleaner game here, they probably win.
Yeah, they probably win. And you know, too, like you look at the teams across the ACC, and especially this year with Clemson being down, like each ACC contender has its flaws, right? Like we can look at Pittsburgh and say, well, they don't run the ball that well, right? Or you know, we can look at NC State team and like, what's their flaw? Like their flaw is consistency. They can do it all. We look at Wake Forest, their flaw is defense. UVA, their flaw is defense. NC State, it's like, nah, they have a pretty good defense up. They got a good quarterback up. They got good running backs, good receivers, good special teams. All right, what's NC State's issue? Oh, they don't do it for all four quarters.
Every week, week in,
week every out. Week, week in, week out for four quarters. And I think the talent's there. The talent was there to win the Atlantic this year. The talent was there to potentially win the ACC this year for NC State. And to be honest with you, Joey, that's with like a good Clemson team. I think NC State could have been right there, which is credit that I didn't give them in the preseason. I thought they'd be decent, but this is a better NC State team than I thought. But they still have the flaws that we see out of traditional NC State teams under Dave Doran, where they can't quite get over the hump.
Well, I was just about to say, you know, talking about having the talent but not being able to consistently put it together, is this the place where I invoke the name of the one and only Dave Doran and ask questions about that, Mike? Who's to say? Who knows? I did want to call out, number one, Ricky Person did not get Bam Knight did not get a ton of opportunity in the run game, 4 carries for 30 yards. He also didn't get a ton of opportunity in the kickoff return game, but he made the most of that. He ran a kickoff back for a touchdown in this game to open the second half, if I'm not mistaken. That was a pretty electric move by him. Also wanted to bring up Emeka Mezi, Devin Carter combined for 17 catches, 265 yards, and 4 scores.
Is that good?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good. Thayer Thomas also 5 catches for 65 yards in this game. That is a hell of a receiving core, and they are a pain to cover where possible. Also need to bring up, Jacori Roberson played a little bit in the first half of this game, but seemed to have left with an injury. To my knowledge, if I'm remembering correctly, and again, it was late Saturday night, I don't believe he returned. If he doesn't come back for Wake Forest, that's a huge loss. Like, A.T. Perry's really good. Part of what makes A.T. Perry good is that Jacori Roberson's on the other side. Like,
yep.
If you can really dial in on him, it becomes a different ballgame. And again, you saw that with Sam Hartman spending most of the game not having Jacori Roberson to throw to, and A.T. Perry got 23 targets. Like, that's what you need to know. I think most of his incompletions were to A.T. Perry, actually.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, something to keep
an eye on. A quarter of them. Literally a quarter of them.
That's right. That's right. That's all I got on this game, Mike. Anything else?
No, I think we're good to move on.
Wake Forest 45, NC State 42. Wake in the driver's seat in the Atlantic. We'll see if they can get there. They just need one more. We'll see. Mike, let's go back to Thursday night. The number 21 Pitt Panthers 30, the North Carolina Tar Heels 23 in overtime. Mike, speaking of
Go to hell, Carolina. Go to hell, Carolina. Continue.
This game was also bonkers. It went to overtime. Pitt was just like wiping the floor with Carolina in the first half of this game. If I'm not mistaken, let me look. It was 17-0 at the end of the first quarter. Carolina scores midway through the second quarter to make it 17-7, and then Pitt immediately responds with a touchdown of their own to make it 23-7 at halftime. Then Pitt doesn't score the entire second half. Carolina scores, finally kicks a field goal with about a minute left to send it to overtime. Pitt scores a touchdown in overtime, and then it was kind of raining. It started raining in the second half of this game, and then it really just absolutely opened up as Carolina took the field in overtime, and Sam Howell trying to throw the ball in a full-on just monsoon. It didn't go great, and Pitt wins the game in overtime.
I had Carolina plus 6.5, so.
And this was, you know, and we were talking about this Thursday night. So, not only on the show, but I think you had that in some real life Van Gorder coin investment.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So, college fund will have to wait.
That's right. Yeah. I had a real life Van Gorder coin investment in the under 72. And you better believe that when this game went to overtime, with a total of 46 points being scored, I was, you know, girding the loins, trying to rage through my parents' house, like, don't you dare score 30 points in overtime to go over the total. And thankfully they did
that.
But also, Mike, not only did this go under that total and I won that wager, this put the win total wager over. Pittsburgh officially goes over 7.5 wins on the season. Hit the cash register sound. Your boy going right to the register. Cha-ching!
Good for you, Joey.
Thank you, Mike.
Good for you. Pitt might win the ACC. Did you have that on your bingo card?
I did not get that far. No.
No, that's because on paper before the season, you would have been nuts to have done that.
Although, bet I could have gotten at least like 12-1 before the season.
I would agree. Yeah. I think that would have been a safe assumption. I was actually tweeting back and forth with Chase Howell of the Action Network, who Hello, Chase. Formerly of Sports Illustrated with me, you know, when he wrote for the Colorado site, I believe. I wrote for the Virginia Tech site. And I tweeted something out about having Carolina plus 6.5. I said, this is going to be either really good after the start Carolina got off to, or it's going to end in pain. And you know what Chase tweeted at me? He said, well, if you look at it from a probability standpoint, because he is a betting analyst at the Action Network. So he tweets back at me and he says, if you're looking at it from a probability standpoint, I have some good news. It's really hard to lose a 6.5 point bet in overtime with the new overtime rules, which makes sense because on paper, starting at the third overtime, you got to start going for two now.
Yeah. Maximum margin of loss would be 4 points, right?
Right. Right. So just get to the third overtime, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Pitt wins by 7. Chase tweets back at me about 15 minutes later. He goes, wow, that's rough. Sorry, dude. Yep. That is rough. You know what else is rough? Carolina probably regrets chasing points there. The first possession of the second half.
Yeah.
11 plays, 52 yards in 5.5 minutes. Carolina had it 4th-and-1 at the pit 23, and Sam Howell got stuffed on a quarterback sneak. Didn't work out. And you kick a field goal there, and all of a sudden that changes the game script late in the game, because now all of a sudden you're sitting there, and instead of kicking a field goal to tie the game, Joey, with 57 seconds left, you would be kicking a field goal to go ahead 26-23. So, well, Mac Brown probably wants that decision back. Mac Brown also wanted the decision back to kick the field goal at the end to tie the game instead of just going for it, which I thought, and I know you were paying attention to this at the time, when Ty Chandler made that catch, which could have been incomplete, but then wasn't.
Yeah.
I thought that with Carolina sitting there, and I tweeted this out, Carolina seeing 4th-and-goal from the Pittsburgh 3, I tweeted out, I'm not so sure that Carolina doesn't go for this here if this pass is ruled complete.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. They ultimately kick a field goal. But Mac Brown said after the game, if I had known that I was dealing with a monsoon in overtime, because as soon as Carolina touched the ball after Pitt scored to make it 30-23 in overtime, it literally opened up at Heinz Field.
It just was nuts.
Torrential downpour. Like just a searing rain. Unbelievable. And Mac Brown said, if I had known that was coming, I probably would have gone for it at the end of the fourth quarter.
That was rain, Mike, that Sam Howell could have thrown a dry ball and it would have been just soaked by the time it got to the receiver. Like, it
yeah.
was, yeah, hell, we hell played of a game. Rainstorm.
We played a game in high school, and I remember the team we were playing against junior year of high school, back in, I guess, 2000. It would have been the fall of 2009.
Dating yourself here, Mike.
I am. I'm old. And we were looking out to the, like, we were playing defense. It was a goal to go situation. And I look out, I'm playing corner. I look out past the line of scrimmage, like out back towards the school. And I see a wall of rain coming right at me. And I said, oh my God, it's going to pour here. Mm-hmm. Like in less than 30 seconds. So they don't even snap the ball middle of the play. They don't even snap the ball, and it's literally a torrential downpour to the point where the game got canceled. Like, we didn't take the field again after that, to give you an idea of like what kind of monsoon that was. And so that's where my mind immediately went when I saw the rainstorm that Carolina was dealing with when they were on offense in overtime. Like, this is an ungodly amount of rain that they're dealing with here.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Mac Brown's reaction afterwards kind of told the entire story. It's like, well, shit, if I knew that was what was happening, we would have just gone for it. And I mean, because they couldn't throw the ball. I mean, they had that one play, I think it was on third down there in overtime when they got the ball. Sam Howell was looking at Antoine Green on the crossing route, and he threw it about 5 yards behind him. I mean, it wasn't even close.
It was like a duck.
I mean, it was an absolute duck and nowhere near him. And, I mean, it was hard for them to run any sort of offensive plays there. And they were having some success in the second half, obviously throwing the football, get themselves back in. Sam Howell was much better in the second half than he was in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they couldn't run those plays in overtime, A, because of the rainstorm they were in, and B, I mean, you just couldn't execute.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way to consistently do that. And I don't know, just a tough situation for Carolina. But this is like, as far as ACC teams go this year, certainly the most disappointing. I would say definitely like the most up and down team. You know, this team could just as easily be like 9-1 or like 1-9. And they sit here at 5-5 because we get quarters of a Carolina team that I think we thought we were going to get coming into the year, where you thought they would win the division. I thought mm-hmm. they would win 9 games. And, you know, if not win the division, be, I think I picked them 2nd in the ACC.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a team that's now 3-4 in ACC play. And I mean, I think we just have to rule this season a colossal disappointment for Carolina.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, just from a trajectory standpoint, like, all right, so after this year, Sam Howell's probably going pro. He's probably going to get like a first round quarterback grade.
Right.
So now what?
What do you do now? Right. What do you do now? You, like, have Drake May coming in, I guess.
I mean, And sure, like, it always could be better than Sam Howell, but like, odds are he won't be. But like, I just, this is what you've gotten with a guy who's going to be a first round level quarterback and all this. Like, this is what your program has built to after 3 years, is you're 5-5. Like, and you're probably 3-4 wins behind your projected win total. Like, it's not a great sign. And you'll beat Wofford next week and make a bowl game, but like you had like potential New Year's Six games aspirations here, and you're lucky to be playing in the Meineke Car Care Bowl or the Little Caesars Pizza Bowl or whatever the hell they play in Detroit now. Like, just what a disappointment for the Tar Heels. The other thing I was going to bring up here, Mike, with this game in particular real quick is I couldn't help but notice that, I mean, and it's a Thursday night game, but like this just had like ACC game written all over it.
It did.
Both teams had drives go for double digit plays, end in turnovers on downs. Pitt missed two field goals and an extra point in this game. It ended in overtime with the most duck looking pass I've ever seen in a rainstorm. They got intercepted. Like, just this game was a mess, and it was awesome, and I loved it, but it was a mess.
Kenny Pickett threw one of the Kenny Pickett played fine, but he threw one of the worst interceptions I've seen in the ACC all year. It was like, oh my God, Kenny, why are you throwing that ball?
Yeah, what is happening?
To the point where Tom Fornelli was like, Pitt is pitting, which was hysterical. They're pitting.
Pitt sacked Sam Howell 5 times. And aside from that, North Carolina still tried to run the ball 33 times against a Pitt defense, and non-sack adjusted numbers, but overall, North Carolina goes 38 carries for 88 yards, an average of 2.3 yards per carry. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Stop trying to run the ball against Pittsburgh.
Stop running against Pittsburgh. See, when Virginia Tech ran against Pittsburgh, we understood that was their only choice, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, why are you running against Pittsburgh? Yeah, but we know they can't throw.
Because you don't want to see the other thing.
Right. We want to see the other thing with Carolina. Mm-hmm. Like, we want to see the passing offense. But the one overarching thing I will say about Carolina and kind of where they're at as a program right now, they're recruiting really well, Joey, right? We can agree.
Sure. Like,
really good recruiting class. All that's really good. They have a player development problem.
They sure do.
They have a player development problem on both sides of the football. Mm-hmm. And Sam Howell's the only thing holding it together. He's going to be gone here in about, I don't know, 2 weeks. He's not going to play in the bowl game.
So you're saying that whole 2018 Louisville post Lamar Jackson thing is,
oh God,
potentially a little bit in play for next year.
Potentially, but I think they've recruited a little bit too well for that to happen.
Probably
bottom out quite like that. I mean, I'd be shocked if it bottomed out that bad, but this could be a pretty average program next year too.
And I've never met either of them, but from what I can tell, Mac Brown slightly more likable than Bobby Petrino. So. Slightly.
I would say so.
Pittsburgh 30, North Carolina 23. We got to keep moving here, Mike. Pittsburgh going to be playing, by the way, they're going to play Virginia next week, and that is the de facto ACC Coastal Division Championship game, just as we all predicted.
Big game. Yeah, just as we all predicted.
That's right. Moving on, Mike, for other interesting and crazy games, Florida State 31, Miami 28. Florida State breaks the streak. Yeah, sure is the right answer here. Florida State goes up 17-0 and leads 20-7 at halftime. Miami comes storming back and takes a 28-20 lead. Florida State kicks a field goal, makes it a 5-point game with about 4.5 minutes left. And then the final drive, they get the ball with about 2 minutes left, way backed up on their own end of the field. There were two absurd plays in this, first being the first play of the drive, which ended up being like a 60-yard pass to get down into the red zone. The second being a fourth and 20-something conversion?
Fourth and 14. Yeah, it was fourth and 14. With 58 seconds left on a crossing route where they had a receiver just running wide open over the middle of the field. So that was good. Good defense there.
Yeah, they get down to the 1 yard line. They run a couple plays, punch it into the end zone for the go ahead touchdown, get a 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
Ultimately win by 3. Goodness gracious. This game was nuts. It was also fun. This felt like more proper Florida State Miami. Not really like, you know, from a quality standpoint, we'll say, but like, from a competitiveness standpoint and from just like a hatred and vitriol standpoint, this felt right, Mike.
It was the most entertaining game in the 3:30 window on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nobody was watching it either. So, I mean, Kirk Herbstreit was on the bus. I saw he posted some on Instagram. He was doing like a college game day, like Q&A type thing before calling the Ole Miss game on Saturday night against A&M. But he was watching the games on the bus with Fowler and the Bear and all them. They had Miami, Florida State front and center. And the thing that he mentioned, and the reason why I bring it up, is because he said, I know not a lot of people care about this game today, but he said, it's still important to us. Like, because, you know, Herb Street remembers, you know, Herb Street's in his 50s. Like, he grew up with the Miami, Florida State games that were insane, you know, the 90s and the 2000s, where this game was the premier game in college football that you circled, you know, before the season started. You're like, when does Miami play Florida State?
Oh, yeah.
And it certainly has lost its luster because both teams absolutely and objectively suck. But this is a game on Saturday that was one of the more entertaining games of the entire day. Tyler Van Dyke, Joey, basically did what he did against UVA, where he was really, really awful in the first half. Like, had a lot of trouble completing passes. And then the second half was outstanding. Like, really, really good to get Miami back in the game. They made adjustments at halftime, and Van Dyke looked competent. And we saw more of the Miami offense in the second half that I think we were expecting all throughout the game when we previewed it, where they were going to be able to hit on some explosive plays.
Yeah.
And they were able to do that in the second half. It's a big reason why they were able to take the lead. But the defense failed them late, you know? And Miami's defense this year has been fine, but man, that's a bummer. I mean, you give up the 4th and 14 there. They do. They cannot tackle. There are a lot of teams that are struggling with tackling in the ACC right now. Miami is right up there. I mean, they cannot tackle. And it really came back to bite them in the ass. I mean, 4th and 14 late to give that up. That is an absolute gut punch. Florida State has a 1st and goal from the 1 with no time left. There's nothing you can do. And, you know, to lose a game like that is just, it's awful.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I saw earlier in the game that Florida State took the 17-0 lead and thinking,
yeah,
wow, like how ridiculous was it that we all thought that Miami -2 or -2.5 was like lock of the year material here? Like,
right.
Somebody right. clearly knew something that we didn't, and then Miami comes storming back and takes a 5-point lead, and it's like, oh, well, there you go.
There was a cover play.
Right team's going to win, and then they didn't. And yeah, I mean, just a wild back and forth.
Really good game.
Miami turns the ball over on the three consecutive possessions in the first half.
Yeah.
Two picks and a fumble. That was kind of what helped Florida State extend their lead. I guess they only scored one touchdown on those three interceptions, those three turnovers. But
right.
Still, I mean, that's a waste of time and a waste of possessions on Miami's part.
Right.
Florida State, you know, did their own turning the ball over. They turned it over once there early in the second half. Miami finishes this game with 14 penalties for 105 yards.
Yeah, that ain't it. They were on pace for over 400 penalty yards because they had like two or three personal foul penalties on their first possession of the game.
On Florida State's first possession. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. First possession on defense. Yep.
Yeah. Just looking at this drive chart, starting with the fourth play, Miami penalty offside. Then Miami penalty personal foul. Then two plays later, defensive offside. Then Miami penalty personal foul. And then Miami offside. Like, in all of this, by the way, like, the first offside moved Florida State from the 44-yard line to the 49-yard line.
Yeah.
They basically got them down to the goal line on penalties alone. Like, on that right. first yeah. drive.
Yeah, Miami's defense did a better job moving the ball than Florida State's offense did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty brutal. I mean, a tough watch in some regards there in the first half, no doubt about it. But Florida State also, like, a thought I had is, like, similar to when we were talking about Virginia Tech and Boston College, like, last Friday night,
mm-hmm.
a similar thought I had is, like, Florida State wasn't good enough to pull away.
Right.
Like, we knew that, right? So Miami's committing all these penalties or turning the ball over in the first half. It never felt like they were out of it, you know? When they're down 14-0, I'm like, it's early, you know? You're down 20-7 at halftime. Okay, it's early, you know? Get a score early in second half, which is what they did. It's like, all right, well, you know, Miami's right here in this game, and then they take the lead. I'm like, all right, like, better team starting to flex its muscles a little bit.
Yep.
But, man, just a real tough ending for the Hurricanes.
Pretty brutal. Credit to Florida State.
Like, absolutely.
Hell of a
absolutely.
Win for that program, just where they've been, what they've been through. Credit to Mike Norvell, got those guys ready to play and all this stuff. I mean, huge credit to them. All the credit in the world. They deserve to win that game, I think, with the way that it all played out.
There are signs, Joey.
There are signs. And this is also the point where I'm not trying to totally break Seminole fans' spirits, but damn, it would have been nice if you like made a tackle on that last play against Jacksonville State.
Yeah, it's going to cost you a bowl game.
Might have been 5-5, needing only one of the next two, but instead they need both of the next two. But Mike, the next two are at Boston College and at Florida, which with the way with the way that those team seasons are going, you're not going to be favored in either of those games. But neither of them is not winnable. Like, it's still on the table for Florida State to make a bowl game this year, which to me is an unqualified success.
Yeah, definitely an unqualified success. I mean, that Jacksonville State game, you win that, I think they make a bowl game because I think they'll split the next two.
And honestly, I'm not sure which one they'll win. Could be either of them.
We're going to have a talk about my alma mater a little later, but it'll be kind of the same conversation. Mm-hmm. the at BC, at Florida is not the easiest stretch to close the year, but it's not the most difficult either. And I think Norvell will have them motivated to try to make a bowl game. I mean, if Florida State gets to a bowl game in year two, you're unqualified success.
Yep, absolutely.
Like, so, absolute success.
All the credit in the world to Florida State. I don't want to get too ahead of myself, Mike. I think they might have something.
They might have something too.
It's not there yet, but I think what they're doing might be working.
I think we're 2 years away.
That's probably right. Yeah.
I think
feel legitimately good in like 2023.
Yeah, because no matter what happens closing this year, you go into next year, the expectation is to win 7.
6-7 is probably right next year. Yeah.
Right. So improve, you know, beat Jacksonville State next year. If they're on the schedule, go ahead and beat them. That would be good. That'd be helpful.
What a place to be for Florida State in 2021.
But seriously though, I think they're probably 2 years away, but I think Norvell's got a little something.
Mike, what does Manny Diaz have? A hot seat?
Well, he does now that Blake James has been fired.
Yeah. See, this is,
well, and not that he didn't before. I mean, he did before, but now it kind of changes the math a little bit now that his athletic director that brought him in is gone.
This is always the benefit that we get when we do record these things late, is it just inevitably happens that there's like big news that happens on Monday that we wouldn't have gotten.
Right.
So not only did Manny Diaz, he followed up the two best wins of the year against NC State and Pitt by totally screwing around and beating Georgia Tech by a really close margin in a game that they should have blown them out by. But now you lost to Florida State, and now your boss and hiring manager got fired.
Right.
just when we thought Manny Diaz might be just absolutely safe going into next year, they're 5-5. They need to beat either Virginia Tech and or Duke to make a bowl game. I think they'll do it minimum one, if not both.
Right.
But man, there is no quicker way to lose all the goodwill in your fan base. And by the way, I saw Cam Underwood put up an article about this at State of the U on Sunday. It was like, you want to talk about just absolutely just throwing gasoline to reignite a fire? Like, go lose to your rival like this? Not a good look. Not a good look.
Not a good look, but I said this to you before we hit record. Like, do you come out of Saturday's game thinking any less of Manny Diaz?
I mean, my opinion of him has never been super high to begin with. So
right, but like, do you come out of it and you're like, man, like, Manny Diaz has to go now. Like, it wasn't that type of performance for me. Maybe it's just because I don't know. It's a rivalry game, so I get the tensions are high anyway, but I didn't come out of this saying, like, oh, Miami lost that game. He absolutely needs to be fired. Absolutely needs to be fired now. And maybe it's just because I'm clouded by the Van Dyke thing. Like, I think Tyler Van Dyke, like, I think they got something there. I think you just figure it out and take your lumps and keep it moving.
Yeah, I don't think that this is the game that goes from, like, yeah, you can come back from next year to, nope, we're moving on.
Right.
And frankly, I mean, with the timing of the AD being fired, like, I don't know how quickly you can replace an AD, but if you have someone hired tomorrow, which is, you know, call it today. Is this episode will go live on Tuesday morning. If they hired an AD today, like in your first 3 to 4 weeks on the job, to go in and fire the head football coach would be a ridiculously like ballsy, like make your presence known kind of move, right? Like
SEC, that'd be a very SEC thing to do.
It would. It would. And
yeah,
I just don't get the impression that like where Miami, the University of Miami is at this point in time, I just don't think they're going to do that. Like the school in general and the funding and like all of it. I just don't think that they're going to line up and try to fire him immediately. I think he gets 2022, but I think it's some pretty high expectations going in, and we'll see how that goes.
I mean, who are they going to get that's better right now?
It's a good question.
They're not getting Mario. I don't buy the Cristobal stuff.
No. Mario Cristobal's not going to Miami. He won't do it. No. There's no good reason for that. Other than, like, it's home or whatever.
His alma mater, but, like, who cares?
I'll say this, too, and there was a news report that came out, I believe it was this morning. Apparently, there is a significant group of former Miami players that
I saw this. Yeah.
Putting together a little powwow. And it's a private powwow, but they're going to take a video and release it in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, that sounds private.
Sure. But they're going to talk about from Andy Slater, Slater Scoop, former University of Miami players will be holding a roundtable on Thursday to talk about the current state of the Hurricanes football program. The 3.5-hour event is private, but a video of the discussion is scheduled to be released next week, I'm told. Interesting.
That'll be funny to watch.
Yeah.
Like, what are they trying to accomplish with that?
This has got to be the single program in the ACC, if not in the country, where, like, former players are arguably, like, way too involved. Why is Ed Reed walking up and down your sideline? Like...
He's the minister of fun or whatever. Him and Matthew McConaughey, Texas.
Yeah. Well, like, that's going great in Austin, too, you can tell.
Oh, yeah. Good job against Kansas this weekend, Texas. What the hell was that?
Goodness.
Rock chalk KU, baby.
There you go. Mike, that's all I got. We got to move on here.
Let's do Section 103 live read.
Let's do that. Florida State 31, Miami 23. Mike, Section 103, as you mentioned, super comfy. We were traveling to Atlanta this week, and we were trying to decide whether or not we wanted to go to the game on Saturday.
We made the right choice, by the way.
I think we made the right choice. It was a little chilly, and I'm just tired, and I knew where this was all going to end up. I don't know if I wanted to go to the game, but
SEC power, ACC power, Boston College, of course.
That's right. Coming to town. That was, you know, I had me quaking in my boots, Mike.
Yeah,
but the thing was, you know, it's like, you know, just in case I wanted to go to the game, I got to bring something. I got to pack something, and you better believe, buddy, I packed the Section 103. I packed the old gold, the old proper Tech gold Tech hoodie. I packed the ATL performance shirt also in Tech gold. I looked good. I went to brunch with some friends, and I was wearing it all. I was stylish. They asked me, where'd you get that? I said, go to section103.com. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. And they said, really? I said, yeah, it's like I practice saying this.
You could be damn sure. And they pay me to say it.
That's right. That's right. And Mike, you too can go to Section 103 and get 10% off your first order using promo code GOACC. Again, it's all sorts of great Georgia Tech apparel. It's high quality. It's incredibly comfortable. It looks great. They've got official word marks. They've got shirts and T-shirts and sweatshirts and hoodies and stuff for men, women, children. All of it in official Tech gold. They've got that ATL logo. Mike, they just released a couple of new shirts, actually, in the last couple of days. There was a really cool volleyball shirt that came out. It says Point Tech on there, which if you've ever been to a Georgia Tech volleyball game, that's a pretty common chant. They've also released some of the official Tech gold shirts in proper cotton instead of just the performance wear. They've released new shirts and sweatshirts with the a little like flag that kind of mocks the one that flies off the front of the Ramblin' Wreck. It says the THWG on there in case you're going to a game here in about a week and a half and need something to
wear. To hell with Georgia, baby.
Got to let them know. To hell with Georgia. All that stuff. Go get it at section103.com. It is the best place on the internet to go buy Georgia Tech apparel. Cannot recommend it enough. You looking for some stocking stuffers? Stuff for basketball season? All of it. It's all there. Go find it. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order at section103.com. Thank you to Steven and the gang at section103.com for sponsoring us. It's been a great partnership. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Absolutely. Mike, Boston College 41, Georgia Tech 30. I told you. Phil Dracovic, yeah. Fully healthy? Not quite. Had a career passing day? Relatively? Yeah, kind of. He went 13 of 20 for 310 yards and two scores.
Sounds about right.
My man completed 13 passes for 310 yards, Mike. Georgia Tech secondary does a lot of things. Covering is not one of them. They don't cover anybody.
Yeah. It's getting late early.
Yeah.
For Jeff Collins. It's getting late early.
This is exhausting.
It is getting late early. And you know what, Joey? I'm going to take a step back because I think I'm a pretty reasonable person.
Mm-hmm.
So allow me to bring some reasonable discussion to the table as a third party observer. Okay.
Yep.
Because I know you're passionate about this. This is your school. I get it. I get passionate about my school. We do that on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Let me bring some logical reasoning to the table.
Bring it.
We're done here.
Kind of seems that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're done here. That doesn't mean he's getting fired this year. He's not.
He's not.
He's not getting fired.
Right.
He's not getting fired. But we're done here. This is like starting to give me late 2020 Virginia Tech vibes, you know, except Georgia Tech's in year three, right? Where's the progress? Now I'm going to get heated. Where's the progress? Where is it? Because I don't see it. The defense has regressed.
Well, if you listen to Jeff Collins' press conferences, if you don't see progress, Mike, you just don't want to see it. You're just not.
Yeah. I'm just not looking for it. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. You're part of the problem, Mike. That's the whole thing.
Yeah. Look, the defense has regressed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Offensively, they have no idea who their quarterback is, and when Jeff Sims is healthy, he's been bad. He's been okay. He's been mediocre. He hasn't been taking the big steps forward that we would expect him to take from year one to year two. Didn't take him. We saw it in glimpses. Didn't take it over a large sample size, right?
Yep.
Jordan Yates, he's fine. He's limited, whatever. We knew that they weren't going to have a big passing day on Saturday. We knew that going in, right?
And yet the interception that he threw was one of the most mind-numbing, just...
Bad.
What
it was bad.
What are you doing? Like moments it was quite I've bad. Seen in a while.
It was quite bad. I mean, what's the plan here? Like, Jeff Collins has been preaching, you know, patience and, you know, we're taking the necessary steps and we're like, what's the plan? That's the question I have for Jeff Collins. Year one, right? I get it. Like, you're going from an option offense to trying to install your scheme. But like in year one, we had no idea what the scheme was, right? We didn't know.
They're
running all sorts
week.
Of stuff. They were running the wishbone. They were running the spread. They were, what do you say? They wanted to be multiple. What was the thing you said?
Yeah. The thing that you usually do on defense, they were trying to do on offense. And there's a reason people don't do that on offense.
Yeah. We're trying to be multiple and all this, all, you know, coach jargon. And they were historically bad offensively, which, some of it's his fault, some of it's not. He could have minimized the damage by not acting like a complete jackass with some of his play calling.
Mm-hmm.
But year two was a little bit better because they had Jeff Sims and Jahmyr Gibbs. You're like, okay, like here's some of the recruits he's brought in. And like, okay, I kind of see what they're trying to do on offense now. And the defense was okay. And this year, the defense is a disaster. Like, it is so bad. It's so bad. Like, you're firing Andrew Thacker, right? You have to. You're firing him, right? Who else are you firing?
So if I have it my way here, Mike, like, you're firing Andrew Thacker. You've had him as your defensive coordinator for 3 years. You've gotten worse.
Mm-hmm.
You're also firing Jeff Popovich, and you're firing Nate Burton, who are your cornerbacks coach and your safeties coach, because your secondary has been inexplicably awful this year. There is no excuse.
What secondary?
That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
Right. And by the way, Mike, the secondary is the same secondary that you ran out there against Clemson 3 years ago. Well, 2 years ago. But like this was what, game 32 under Jeff Collins, 31? It's the same secondary as it was in game one. And they've gotten worse.
They've gotten way worse, much worse.
It's the same players with the same talent, and they're getting worse. So who does the blame fall on? Like
at
it's
some
obvious.
Point, at some point, you got to put your players in position to be successful. And I just don't think that their defensively minded head coach is doing that.
He's not. He's not.
Which is mind numbing.
It's like this. This has the feel of a guy who. So like I feel like Jeff Collins is one of these guys who's like a relatively new manager in, you know, in the workplace. And what he's always been told is it's a good thing to kind of give your employees direction, but try to be hands off and let them do their thing. And then he brought in like a college kid, basically, like right out of college, and said, like, okay, I need you to manage the project, but I'm going to be hands off. Like ignoring the fact that this college kid has never managed projects before and doesn't really know what he's doing. And he can act like he knows what he's doing and set up a couple of update meetings, but like he doesn't know how to run an update meeting and he doesn't know how to make a client happy and like all this stuff. But Jeff Collins staying off, you know, hands off. Hey, Andrew Thacker, you know, your defense, do your thing. Like this doesn't make sense. This all reeks of a guy who doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
And that's all the on-field stuff, by the way, before we get into how he's handled the media and how he's messaging the program. And that's all insulting to our intelligence too. Like, the whole thing is an absolute mess.
It's insulting.
From it.
Joey, it's insulting to his intelligence, the way he's handling the media stuff, to be quite honest.
It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I'm sick of watching it. It's so frustrating. And it's, you know, I had somebody text me Saturday night. It was like, you know, I can't believe that you're not some, like, rage monster on Twitter right now. Like, you should be trying to burn down half of the Bird app, you know, with how angry you are. And I'm like, it's hard to be raging and angry if you don't have expectations.
Right.
I expected this. I told you on the preview. It's like, no, they're going to get beat. You've got a more talented team against a less talented team, but you've also got a poorly coached team against a well-coached team. And here you go. The well-coached team won by 11 points, and it probably wasn't even that close.
Yeah. Too much ego with Jeff Collins. Too much
something,
ego.
Something. I don't know. Hubris or ego, something. I don't really know.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, this is ridiculous. You're going to see, and if you don't see defensive changes from Georgia Tech staff, I don't know what to tell you. Like, there's no excuse for it. You're going to see it, and if you don't, bet the under on the win total next year. Like, because like you said, we're done here. Like, this, unless something drastically changes, this isn't going to work.
Yeah, bet the under on the win total and bet the over on team totals for every opponent that Georgia Tech plays.
That is correct. That is correct. Good game for Boston College. Phil Jurkovic, very good. ACC quarterback of the week, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, credit to him. Boston College, like I said, not the most talented team in the world, but really well coached. And they're 6-4. Going to a bowl game, Mike.
They are going to a bowl game. Yep. They're probably going to be in position to at least split the next two.
We'll see. Yeah. Interesting matchups against Florida State and Wake, both at home.
Both at home is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Both those teams going up into Chestnut Hill this time of year. It works to Boston College's favor. We'll say that.
Yeah. Have fun with that weather.
All right, can we be done talking about Georgia Tech?
Yeah.
Boston College 41, Georgia Tech 30. Let's keep moving. Louisville 41, Syracuse 3. What the hell happened in this game, Mike? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I bet Syracuse plus the 3.
How'd that go?
I'm not talking. Well.
They scored 3.
They scored 3, yeah. Yep. So. All they needed to do was not give up 41.
Louisville should try retiring Lamar Jackson's jersey every week, I think, is the takeaway here. Malik Cunningham, 13 of 18 for 209 and 4 scores, no picks. I mean, this was, by every measure, this was an absolute top-to-bottom beatdown by Louisville.
They led
35-3 at halftime. I think they scored on almost every offensive possession in the first half. Yeah, they went touchdown, 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 punt, touchdown.
Is that good?
It's a pretty strong start to the game, I have to say. You couldn't do a whole lot better than that, if I do say so myself.
What the hell was Syracuse doing here?
I don't know. Like, Louisville's defense has had moments. I guess they just decided to have a moment the entire game here. Like, I mean, Syracuse offense, 39 carries for 138 yards between Sean Tucker and Garrett Schrader.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
And Louisville sacked Garrett Schrader four times, so that kind of plays in a little bit, but like...
It is just so funny seeing Syracuse's rushing totals and having it really only encompass one, literally one quarterback and one running back. It's so anti-college football in that regard.
Pretty weird. Pretty wild.
Yeah, it's anti 2020s college football, that's for sure.
Yeah.
This isn't the mid-90s anymore. Yeah, you're talking about the Louisville defense. How about the Syracuse defense? What are we like? Syracuse's defense isn't that bad.
They're not.
Like, what? I'm baffled by how bad this was.
This feels like Louisville just got ultra hot on offense out the gate, and
they did.
Syracuse can just never really like get a handle on the game. I mean, or it took until the second half when it was just way out of hand, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen Mitchell averaged almost 7 yards per carry for Louisville.
Yeah. I mean, you figure the game basically ended. Louisville comes out of halftime, up 35-3. They go 8 plays, 56 yards, kick a field goal. Syracuse goes 13 plays, 65 yards, and turns it over on downs, trying to score a touchdown. You know,
that's the stuff.
Fourth and goal from the two.
That's the stuff.
At that point, game's over. Like, you're not coming back from that.
Oh, man. Yeah. Nothing like being down 5 touchdowns, manufacturing a long drive, and getting literally 0 points out of it.
Yeah. Shout out to Louisville for standing up and just absolutely kicking the teeth in of Syracuse here. I mean, Syracuse is not this bad of a team. It's just, I think they ran into Louisville on the wrong day, and the Cards just jumped all over them.
Louisville hasn't even been that good lately.
They really hadn't.
I mean, this performance kind of came out of absolute nowhere. I mean, they had lost 2 straight. They put out their highest point total all season, with the exception of the UCF game.
Yeah.
I mean, this is...
Yeah, I mean, they had lost 4 out of 5
I got no words.
This game, and the only one they'd won was the Jerkovic-less Boston College team. Like, yeah. Like, I at least thought this was going to be a competitive game. I mean, we both... took Syracuse plus +3 on the preview show. Like, Louisville,
that
just
was wrong, man.
Louisville had not been in a good spot and felt like they weren't trustworthy. But man, like, goodness gracious, what a performance from Louisville in this game. Shout out to them and Syracuse. Hey, you guys are doing okay. You're 5-5. You need one win in the next two against NC State and Pittsburgh to get to bowl eligibility. I'm not gonna say you're gonna do it, but I'm gonna say you could do it.
They could do it. And either way, Dino's earned himself another year.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think so.
You can't fire him.
Especially with what Syracuse is these days. And, Mike, the other thing I'll point out, I won the over. I cashed the over on the Pittsburgh over 7.5 wins ticket.
Yep.
The Louisville over 6.5 wins ticket.
Still in play.
Still on life support. Ain't dead yet. Two games left at Duke, home against Kentucky. You got to win them both to get to that over, but that's on the table.
Can't wait to see them lose to Duke next Saturday.
I know. I can't wait. It'll be crushing. It'll be great. Can't wait. Louisville 41, Syracuse 3. We have run really long on this show, Mike. Let's keep going here. Not a ton to talk about.
It's okay. We can make these quick.
Not the most to talk about. Number 9, Notre Dame 28. Virginia 3.
Virginia's awesome.
Okay, I know Virginia's awesome, Mike, but like not in this game they weren't. Not in this game. Brendan Armstrong did not play.
Their defense is so bad, Joey.
It was pretty
so bad.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't mean to cut you off, but their defense is so bad.
It's not great.
I mean, look, here's the story of the game, right? A lot of Virginia fans were crying on the internet about not having Brian Armstrong. I get it. It hurts. It sucks you didn't have Brian Armstrong. Brian Armstrong wasn't going to be tackling Kyren Williams, Chris Tyree.
And that was what we said on the preview, right? Was
right.
Taking Notre Dame minus the five largely because I felt like they were just going to run it down Virginia's throat the whole night. And guess what they did?
Yeah, they did. Averaged 6.6 yards per carry at 249 yards rushing. Jack Cohn threw three touchdown passes. I mean, at some point, you just got to look in the mirror and realize your defense isn't any good. So, yeah, while I understand that it sucks not having Brennan Armstrong, the reason why this game wasn't competitive is because UVA simply could not get a stop. They could not get a stop. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Which is Notre Dame was funny. It's kind of funny because they did get a stop in the first drive. I mean, Notre Dame's first half drive chart, 12 plays, 54 yards, turnover on downs.
Yep.
6 plays, 43 yards, touchdown. 7 plays, 60 yards, touchdown. 9 plays, 80 yards, touchdown. And, I mean, they were up 21-0. I mean, the game was over. It felt like it was over at that point.
Yeah, no, it was for sure. Notre Dame was 7 of 11 on third down. Virginia 5 for 14. Notre Dame had four outgains UVA in this game, 423 to 278. Both teams had a couple turnovers. But, I mean, UVA wins the time of possession and loses by 25.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just, I mean, at some point you got to get a stop. I'm not talking about just on the first possession. I'm talking about like over the course of the entire game, you need to make some stops defensively. And that's why when UVA sits here at 6-4 and they have games remaining against Pittsburgh and Virginia Tech. Yeah, sure. I could see Virginia getting to 8 wins. I could see them finishing at a more likely 7-5, but I could also see them losing both of those games.
Yeah.
So I think all bets are off with the defense playing as poorly as it is. And that's before you even take into account the Brennan Armstrong injury. But Notre Dame continues to be really good. This is a rebuild year for Notre Dame. They're 9-1.
Yeah, which that's impressive.
They're not going to lose again. They're not going to lose again.
I mean, did you see who they got coming to town next week?
Uh-huh. Yes, I do. They're a large favorite.
Yeah, well, rightfully so. I don't know that Georgia Tech stands a chance in that game. But we're not talking about Georgia Tech anymore. Look, if coming into this game, like if we had known during the preview, and there was suspicion, we weren't really sure. If we had known for certain in the preview, Brennan Armstrong's not playing here, A, what would the spread have been? Probably outside of a touchdown.
Probably. It was ND 5.5.
Yeah. I mean, I bet that would be somewhere between 8 and 10, probably. And I still would have taken Notre Dame.
I would have too, because again, Brennan Armstrong doesn't play defense. And Notre Dame's defense, by the way, even without Kyle Hamilton, has been very good over the last month.
Really pretty good. Yeah.
Very good. And I get some of it's like, oh, okay, who are you playing? But they played some competent offenses.
Mm-hmm.
So I still would have taken Notre Dame against the spread. And I don't know what the end result would have been, but we know that Armstrong doesn't play defense. So.
Well, and just Armstrong is just, I mean, he's like the whole team feels a little bit like a one-trick pony. I mean, like the entire offense is either him throwing the ball or him improvising on the ground.
Like, right.
And if you don't have him, clearly, like, whatever else you have isn't good enough. Like, and I say that you're playing a top 10 Notre Dame team, like, who's got a really good defense. They've got a lot of talent. Like, do I think you're going to lose every game by 25 points if you don't have Brennan Armstrong? No. But this particular game, like, you're not going to be competitive. Like, it is what it is.
No.
Like, and hopefully he comes back healthy, you know, next week and he's healthy down the stretch here and Virginia's able to give their best effort in their final two games.
Yeah, and this is an explosive offense with Brennan Armstrong. We've mentioned that. This is one of the more explosive offenses that Virginia's had under Bronco Mendenhall, maybe the most explosive offense they've had. My whole thing is that Armstrong will still throw you the ball a few times defensively. Like, he'll still throw you the ball. And this is a bad matchup for UVA because Notre Dame's strength is running the football, and UVA can't stop the run. So it was a flat-out bad matchup for UVA on paper, regardless of if Armstrong played or not.
Yep, exactly. But despite it all, Mike, you know what we say?
Virginia is awesome.
That is correct. They sure are. They sure are. I'm glad you agree with me, Mike. Virginia is awesome.
He's so mad. Yeah.
He's so mad.
Levels. Levels of anger. Yeah.
Okay, let's pick the mood up a little bit. Notre Dame 28, Virginia 3. Virginia Tech 48, Duke 17. Justin Fuente going out on his home field with a win here.
Hell yeah, foo.
Good job, Justin.
Virginia Tech averaged 9.7 yards per play. That's their highest mark in 13 years. Duke is horrible.
Would we say that Virginia Tech ran the dang ball in this game?
I would say that they ran the dang ball. 297 yards, 7.2 yards per carry, non-sack adjusted.
Yeah, that'll do.
Braxton Burmeister was pretty good. He was 9 of 15 for 215 yards and 3 touchdowns. He made some throws in this game, Joey.
He completed 9 passes for 215 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Yes. High-level takeaway, Virginia Tech had explosive plays both in the running game and the passing game. We hadn't seen a lot of that really all season. They had a 40-yard run by Raheem Blackshear. They had a 49-yard run by Keyshawn King. They had a 41-yard pass play to Tavion. They had a 47-yard pass play on the wheel route for the touchdown to Keyshawn King. There were explosive plays in this game. Caleb Smith running butt-ass naked on the post. Duke had no business covering anybody. They wanted no part of it all afternoon.
Nope.
Caleb Smith run a post. Nobody's within 30 yards of him.
Just
he has a 34-yard touchdown catch. Gone. Duke is horrible. And I guess it's worth noting Gunnar Holmberg didn't play. Does it matter?
No,
correct. That's correct.
Like, what, this might have been 48-24 or something if Gunnar Holmberg had played, but Virginia Tech would have probably had another interception. Like,
we should have locked this up. We were thinking about it.
It was like 11.5. Kind of a lot of points with how, like, there's a word I'm looking for. Like, kind of slow, underwhelming, kind of meh Virginia Tech's offense had been in a lot of spots this year.
You mean bad?
Yeah, bad or yeah, just yeah. No, that's a good word. Bad.
That's good. Yeah.
How bad Virginia Tech's offense had been in a few spots this year. Like, I don't know if I really wanted to give like 12 points, but very quickly they made me regret that. I mean, they're up 17-3 at halftime and it just kind of snowballed from there. It got worse in the second half.
Virginia Tech wins this game by 31 points. They were 4-for-10 on third down, but they still managed to have 573 yards of offense and 106 yards worth of penalties, and they won by 31 points.
They were 4-for-10 on third down and also 2-for-2 on fourth down, meaning Duke forced 10 third downs in this game, and only 4 times did they actually get off the field.
Yeah.
Like, 6 of those 10, Virginia Tech kept the drive alive.
You know how upside down this game had to be for Duke to give up 573 yards of offense, for Virginia Tech to only be converting third downs at a 40% clip, and to have 106 yards worth of penalties. On 12 penalties, and you still lose by 31 points? Oh, by the way, you possessed the ball more than 7 minutes longer than Virginia Tech did. What are we doing?
Dude, not great in Durham.
Cutcliffe's done, right? Like, are we done with this at Duke? We're done, right? Like, they're not going to fire. I know they're not going to, like, technically fire him.
Put up a statue of him.
Right. Statue that guy. But also get him off the sideline. This is horrible.
It is.
It's horrible.
And like, this is – I'm going to use a phrase that's really dangerous to use in these cases, Mike, but it's I think it's legitimately true.
Uh-oh.
It can't get much worse. They're 0-6 in the ACC, and most of those they've been losing by like 3 scores or more. Like, yeah, like they could lose by 4 scores or more, fine, but like you can't like they've got Louisville and Miami at home the next 2 weeks. They lose both of those. Those aren't like guaranteed losses.
Well, there are no guaranteed losses in the ACC. We
definitely
know that.
Definitely not.
Yeah. There are no guaranteed wins, but certainly no guaranteed losses.
But, like, you're going to be a double-digit underdog at home in both of those games. Like, where's the bright spot here? Like, what are you building on? Like, Arch Manning's not coming to Duke just because Dave Cutcliffe's there. Like,
I mean, I have a bright spot. The season's almost over.
There you go. Louisville's like a 19.5-point favorite on your field next week.
Oh, my God.
Give me the Blue Devils. No. Give the Blue Devils in the 18.5.
No.
Not yet.
I'm not going to go walking on that bridge with you, but enjoy.
Yeah. Big yikes. I'm with you. It's time. Move on.
Yeah, move on. These are two coaches absolutely dead in the water.
That's right. Yeah. Virginia Tech 48, Duke 17. Last game here, Mike. Clemson 44, UConn 7. And I swear, if you didn't know anything about this game, I swear to you, I'm not making this up. Clemson was trailing in this game at one point.
Yes, they were.
There is nothing more appropriate to open up a game where Clemson is a 41-point favorite than for them to give up a kickoff return for a touchdown to open the game. And it was so bad that with like 25 yards to go, UConn's players are high-fiving down the sideline because Clemson doesn't have anybody within 10 yards. Like, are you kidding me? And then Clemson just rolled from there. It's fine.
I was going to say, can I tell you what happened next?
Yeah.
UConn didn't score again, and Clemson scored 44 unanswered.
UConn never converted a third or fourth down in this game. They attempted a combined 18 of them. They did not convert one.
Okay, non-sack adjusted here, but it's pretty funny. UConn rushing attempts, 25 carries for negative 17 yards.
Is that good?
No, that is not good.
Not how you draw it up then. Okay.
Now UConn, the best thing that happened to UConn this week was hiring Jim Mora, and I'm not even sure that was the right decision. So
I'm we're fairly sure that was not the right decision.
And the thing about it is, I don't know what the right decision is, but I don't think that's it. I can tell you what the wrong decision is. And that's probably the wrong. If you can't win at UCLA, you're not going to be able to win at UConn, right?
I mean, that is correct.
That is, I mean, it's hard enough to get UCLA to care about their football program, and now you're going to a program that cares even less than UCLA did. So you're not going to be able to win there either.
Yeah. We will, we'll see how that goes. Have fun, Jim Moore Jr.
UConn had 99 yards of offense. They were 0 for 14 on third down, 0 for 4 on fourth down. They committed 70 yards worth of penalties, negative 17 rushing yards, two turnovers.
Just absolute massacre.
Yeah, and Clemson's entire team got hurt, basically.
Yeah, that was the thing I was going to bring up, is that maybe the most important takeaway from this game is that Ty Pumichon got hurt again. Not great.
Nope.
When DJ Uiagalelei against UConn goes 21 of 44 and throws a pick, like, is this, like, is it, do we need to move on from DJU? Like, there's somebody else waiting in the wings can be better than this for Clemson, right?
I think DJU could be a surprise transfer portal candidate this offseason.
I think so, too.
And that's not being talked about on the national scale, but we're going to talk about it on this podcast because I do think that's a possibility.
Yeah.
They got some quarterback talent coming in, Joey.
Yeah. I think that's on the table because what they're getting from him is not acceptable, just frankly.
It's worse than Kelly Bryant, so
yeah,
you replaced him. And I get you replaced him with probably the best quarterback in school history. So
yep.
I get it. But
there you just, go.
We're gonna be banging that drum.
Clemson 44, UConn 7. Mike, that's all for official ACC games. However, Toledo 49, our Bowling Green Falcons 17.
Yeah, this was Maction on Wednesday night.
Yes.
And we forgot to recap it on the preview, so we apologize for that. We did see the email. Who was that? Shane sent it to us? Is that Shane?
I think it was Shane, yeah, who had also sent in something about, I completely missed that on the Georgia Tech recap. I was too busy with my rant. But, yeah, he said, where's my Bowling Green, insert Falcon scream, preview for this week? They're playing Toledo tonight. I guess the plan had been to cover that game during the Week 10 recap. It looks like you guys forgot. No, Shane, truthfully, what happened is that our whole just feng shui here got totally thrown off by the Mac switching to Tuesday night games. We recorded the preview Tuesday night. They played the game Wednesday, but we didn't have the episode like edited and ready to upload until Thursday. So we got to preview a game that had already happened, as it turned out. So we were right, though. It's fine. Toledo beat that ass.
Yeah, as they do.
As one does. That's right. Yeah. If you look at the box score here, which is specifically what I'm looking at because I did not watch this game. This was an old school.
You didn't watch this game?
This is an old school, just like somebody kicked Bowling Green's ass game. They got outgained by 300 yards, 350 yards almost. Just not competitive. Not competitive.
Hmm.
You know what?
Okay.
Bowling Green, we'll try it again this week.
I mean, I won't be picking them.
I probably won't either. It has quickly gone back downhill. So, good job.
Yeah.
That's all I got. Mike, you want to give us some awards?
Let's do it.
You want to improv some awards?
Go ACC moment of the week. Tyler Van Dyke. So, Miami is trailing 31-28 with no time left. Now, granted, we're in a situation here where Miami needs a miracle, like a Hail Mary. So Tyler Van Dyke goes to spike the ball with 2 seconds left. A couple different things here. Number one, instead of just taking the snap under center and spiking the ball like a normal individual, Tyler Van Dyke took the snap, took a three-step drop, and then spiked the ball. So I want to preface this by saying, with the way that he handled that, it doesn't matter how much time was left on the clock. He handled that incorrectly, and they were in a bad spot there anyway. But in college football, you can't clock the ball, you can't spike it without time expiring unless there are at least 3 seconds left on the clock. Well, there were two. So before you even compound it with the fact that he took a three-step drop, you should have never spiked it in the first place. So you're trying to indict Manny Diaz. Maybe you just talk about how they're not well coached for those types of situations, but I don't know. It was bad. It was funny, though.
Seems like the right place to go with that discussion, yes.
Yes, but it's not getting nearly the enough love that it deserves. So.
Go ACC to you, Tyler Van Dyke. Good try. Good try. I see what you were going for there. You just didn't really know the rules.
Good try is right.
Mike, the Brian Van Gorder Memorial You Tried Award, we haven't talked about this, but I think we could kind of give it in combo to the two teams that got blown the F out this weekend. That being Syracuse and Virginia, scored a combined 6 points in those games, lost by a combined several points. I can't do a quick math right now.
Well, I got one for you. They were outscored 69-6.
Nice.
There it is.
Nice.
There it is.
I love it. Y'all tried to have competitive games, and for various reasons, you didn't. Virginia, you were missing your quarterback, so we get that. Syracuse, you showed up on Lamar Jackson Day, and that was a mistake. You should have tried to reschedule that.
I would have. I would have. Yes.
So, good on you. You tried. It went okay. Try again next time, Syracuse and Virginia. Mike, the Kobe Bryant Memorial Volume Shooter of the Week Award. Are we still doing like Sam Hartman with this award, or are we retiring him from it?
I think we gotta go with Sam Hartman.
Kind of feels like a Sam Hartman.
I mean, he completed less than 50% of his passes, less than 40% of his passes.
He racked up some yards, like he had 290 yards, but it took you 47 passes to get there, and you threw three picks along the way. That is some Kobe stuff if I've ever seen it. Almost cursed.
It's not great. Yeah, it's okay. You hold the keys to adding this thing. So
that's right.
It's all good.
I'm the little choir boy of this show. I don't curse.
No.
So
neither do
Sam
I.
Hartman, 47 passing attempts for not quite 300 yards. A massive 6.2 yards per attempt. I believe there was somebody else there, and I can't remember who it was. Might have been Garrett Schrader having 20 rushing attempts for like 50 yards or something.
I can give you I'll give you the exact stat right now. He had 20 carries for 43 yards.
Oh, even worse. Perfect.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so.
Obviously not sack adjusted, but shout out to those guys.
Yeah.
All right, well, go ACC and big ol' Kobe.
Kobe.
Kobe. Mike, player of the week.
Oh, man. There are several candidates for this. Phil Dracovic had 5 touchdowns, 2 through the air, 3 on the ground. So that was pretty good. You can give this award also to NC State receivers Emeka Emezi and Devin Carter in a losing effort.
I was going to say.
Combined for 17 receptions for 365 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Those guys.
I'm sorry, 265 yards, excuse me.
Those guys in combo with Devin Leary like absolutely play their asses off in that game.
Yep. Yep.
Credit to them. I mean, those guys for sure. Phil Dracovic for sure.
Dax Holyfield, Virginia Tech linebacker, had 11 tackles, a sack, 1.5 tackles for loss. he's been pretty bad all year, but he was really good against Duke. So.
Yep. He was good. He was good. And, you know, shout out to Kenny Pickett for once again doing enough. He did most of it in the first half and then the rest of it in overtime. He did nothing in the second half, but, you know, hey, got the win.
Stick it with Pickett.
Oh, what, you just wait till like year five to start coming up with catchphrases?
Yep.
All right. Well, wish we had had that like 3 years ago, but hey, there you go.
He's the paper boy. He always delivers. Yeah.
I think that's what they call Stetson Bennett, but you know, hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
ACC team of the week. I think it's Wake Forest for me.
Yeah. I was going to go with Syracuse. They were a close second, losing by 38 points.
My backup was Florida State. Shout out to the Noles.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hear it. Shout out to the Noles for sure.
There you go. Mike, that's all I got on week 11. Anything else?
No, I think we're good. I'm laughing at my own joke.
Well, it's late, and yeah. That's what starts happening.
Yeah.
I don't know if the grammar of that sentence was right, but who cares?
Yeah, it's okay.
You want to work on getting out of here?
Yeah, we're on to week 12. Only two more weeks left of regular season ACC football, which means we're just getting started.
I'm excited because I'm actually going to finally stop traveling for like, you know, like a month or two, meaning I can now actually watch games.
So what you're saying is you don't. Yeah. You haven't watched college football basically all season. So are you going to meet me in Durham on Thursday night for Louisville Duke?
No.
Good.
I'm so tired, Mike. I need a nap. I don't know if I made this very clear to the people on the podcast, but just for what it's worth, I have now traveled 5 of the last 6 weekends, 4 of those for weddings, the 5th one being for the Braves World Series parade. Shout out to the champs. So basically every weekend since like early October, with the exception of one weekend, I have not been like just sitting on my couch watching college football. Like I have been in other cities every weekend since then. And it's exhausting, and I'm too old for this, and I am excited to just like sit on my couch and watch football this weekend. So I you know, excited to preview those games and then see if I'm right or not.
I'm glad you're going to watch football. That'll be good.
Yeah, that's, you know, necessary to preview this or to,
that'll be good.
You know, produce this program.
Yeah, and if you change your mind about traveling, you know, we can meet at Keenan Stadium for Wofford in North Carolina. Sam Howell, by the way, upper body injury, may not play in that game. I just read.
That you have to have that win. Like, you better know good and well that the backup plan is going to work there.
Go Terriers, baby.
We'll see. That could get so sideways, and I can't wait.
Wofford in North Carolina.
Let's get out of here, Mike. Until we come back and start previewing games, the people can find us on Twitter. I am at FTRS Joey. He is at Mike McDaniel SOS. Together, we're at BC Podcast ACC. Y'all can find us on iTunes, on Spotify, anywhere you find the podcast. Go hit the follow button, the subscribe button. We really appreciate those who do. You can find us on, you can send us emails with questions, comments, concerns to the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it, sort of.
A little rocky. Not my best performance. Mike, where else can they find us on the social medias?
Facebook, facebook.com/basketballconference. Rate, review, find all your podcasts there. On Instagram, where we have an account that exists that we don't really use, at BC Podcast ACC.
It's not an imposter account. It's there. We appreciate the followers. So
go
hit that follow button if you could.
Yeah. Yeah, please.
Mike, anything else?
I need to go to sleep.
Same. You want to come back and preview week 12?
Yes.
Let's do it. All right. Well, until then, for Mr. Mike McDaniel, I am Joey Weaver. We will talk to you again soon. I can't talk. We will talk to you again soon. And until then, go ACC.